What happened in Watts in the 5 days of August, 1965? As long ago as 1961, and as recently as a few days before the insurrection, a handful of people said things were so oppressive, people so shattered, that the worst could happen. But the consensus, official and citizen alike, was, not so, not in Los Angeles. What happened in Watts?
It was at that time, 7:45 p.m. Wednesday, when California Highway Patrolman Lee Minicus tried to arrest a 21-year-old Negro, Marquette Fry, on drunken driving charges. A crowd began to gather then and grew to 200 persons, nearly all yelling threats and some throwing rocks. At 8:20 p.m., Minicus and his backup officer, his partner Bob Lewis, called for assistance. Minicus tried to put Fry into the patrol car, and Fry's mother, Mrs. Rena Fry, jumped on his back. Additional officers arrived, held off the crowd at gunpoint, and the Fries were driven away in a patrol car. The crowd moved on down the street. At 10:15 p.m., several hundred Negroes poured into an intersection, began stoning passenger cars and breaking store windows. At 11 p.m., police sealed off an eight-block area around 116th Street and Avalon Boulevard near where the Fries were arrested. Authorities in Los Angeles have declared a state of insurrection earlier today, under which guardsmen were mobilized, but control remained officially in civilian hands. Disorder spread throughout the Negro Belt south of downtown Los Angeles, which stretches 15 miles west almost to the sea. Most of the city's 334,900 Negroes live in the area. The city's total population is 2.4 million. Rioting last night reached the edge of the University of Southern California campus near Exposition Park. Rioting was reported last night and earlier today in suburban sections where there are many Negro residents. About 100 Negroes jeered, hurled rocks, and fired weapons at police in Venice on the coast near Santa Monica.
I was at the scene of mass rioting today out in the Watts area and also in the South Central District. The Negroes there are armed with all types of weapons which they're looting from the stores. Right down there in the riot area, it's completely terrible. I mean, there's completely mass disorder, and I don't think there's anything that can't cope with the situation. There are people walking around with guns, firing at officers, burning stores and what have you. I mean, it's really frightening. And it's spreading, it's very consistent, and I mean, it's something very awful. I mean, you can't find a correct adjective to describe the types of situations that are going on out there. I mean, it's really horrifying and it's very frightening.
The liquor stores, they left the wine on the shelf. They got everything else. In the pawn shop, they just stripped them. If they know that a business down there is owned by a white person, they've been attacking it. And this is primarily what it's been. The liquor stores, the pawn shops, and the clothing stores, and the furniture stores. They just went on in and wiped the stores out.
If anything happened to my tire went flat, we'd be dead. We stopped to photograph a burning furniture. I guess it was not a warehouse, Friendly Furnishers, completely engulfed in flames. There were about three fire trucks there, and four policemen with shotguns, and a crowd of, I'd say, 500 residents of the neighborhood, old Negro. And while we were there, they touched off a new Buick Riviera, just lit up. I don't know how the car got. It was sitting out in the middle of the street, abandoned. And they set it on fire. And I went down to photograph it, and it was just descended upon by this mob, and Ivor and I had a run for our lives with that car.
In every Southern California community with big Negro populations, tension mounted, crowds gathered, and police added extra crews. The terror in the streets caused a rush among white citizens to arm themselves. Homeowners with guns waded through the night in countless homes.
Groups in battle formations, supported by police with riot guns, began a sweep to drive arsonists and looters from predominantly Negro sections, where 18 men were killed in 24 hours worth of violence. Acting Governor Glenn Anderson has declared Los Angeles a disaster area. County Sheriff Peter Pitches has called for additional law officers from five adjacent counties and neighboring cities. 10,000 National Guardsmen, all available in the state, have already been committed. Reserves were thrown into the battle against renewed rioting today. Police warned white citizens they would not be safe driving south of Pico Boulevard, the southern fringe of the Los Angeles downtown section. The mercury in Los Angeles hit 94 degrees today. Temperatures have been over 90 in Los Angeles since last Sunday. Police Chief William Parker said earlier today that the situation was still out of control, no control was near, and that the only way we're going to stop this thing is to arrest, arrest, arrest.
The riot broke out about 4 days before the middle of the month relief checks or due to arrive in the hands of the people out there, 60% of whom are on welfare.
Two freeways bypass Watts. The freeways that do go through a Negro area are elevated enough that any citizen who even comes in that direction can conveniently not see Negro life or anything approaching it. In every other example of community life in Los Angeles, it is perfectly easy to ignore, what is it, close to 500,000 Negroes, except on the rare instances when they are domestics, civil servants, or venture into the downtown area to shop.
All that riot and stuff going on, I'm glad they're having it. I hope they don't stop. I hope it keep going around the nation and clean out all of them. Burn, Watt. They sorry. Keep burning, Watt. Don't stop now. I'm with you. All the way.
I'm sorry because you didn't listen. You've been told over and over again in many different ways this was about to happen. As Negro people in the community, we were working very hard to prevent this. We said over and over again,
the United States and Los Angeles is a white world. It's a white legal world. It's a white financial world. It's a white police world. It's a white business world. It's a white world. And it's a world which has no respect for a Negro man. It's a world which is constantly disrespecting him. It's a world which is constantly expressing gross disdain for him. However an individual may fight this, he still lives with this. He lives with this night and day. At some point or another, it must force from this white world a recognition, an acknowledgement. Yes, we see you are there, you do live. And in a sense, these riots, the revolt is...
We recognize that all teenagers have a need to blow off steam, to stretch, to challenge. Newport Beach, they do. But yet, it's different when the Negro expresses it.
The very first time, I've never had this type of duty before. It was an experience of which I don't think I will ever forget. It was an encounter which was very definitely savage in content and made one think in a very serious manner as to how United States citizens could be shooting at United States citizens. But these people were very definitely showing that they cared not about people of their own race or people of any other race, and they showed only one thing in mind, and this being sacking and vandalizing the neighborhood and causing as much grief and harm and disorder as they possibly could.
The chief of police, I've seen him on television these last few days, trying to blame the whole thing on agitators. Parker said, well, agitators have been going into that neighborhood for 2 years and telling those people they're deprived. And so naturally they're beginning to believe them. My God, does he really believe these people are so stupid that they don't know they're deprived until agitators tell them so?
If you look at the TV and the radio coverage, if you look at the newspaper coverage of this event, the entire press coverage, with almost no exception, is white. Here we're talking on TV where we look at face after face after face covering this Negro revolt, and there isn't a Negro face discussing it. We get this all filtered through white minds, white thinking, white experience, white relationships, and let's face the most important fact, white fears. White fears of the Negro, of what the Negro will do, of where the Negro will move, and of course, always in the back of everybody's mind, would you like one to marry your daughter? And let's not forget this. This is the big, ridiculous bugaboo, the fetish.
Now look, a white man in Mississippi will go with a colored woman. But you let a colored man, look how they did for Emmett Till. He whipped at a low-class white woman, they
tell
say. And
they
how they found him. They found him, he was dating.
That's right.
And he wasn't
That's
15 years old. If
That's
a white man can go with a colored woman, why can't a colored man go with a white woman?
That's
she
right.
ain't
Be
no
sure.
better than us. That's right.
That's right. Yeah.
We are born equal. At least many of us believe that we are born equal. But yet, the Negro is expected to behave in a superior manner. Remember, the churches were bombed. The news media brought it to our teenagers. Young children were killed in a church at Sunday school. The snipers killed Medgar Evers. Now, when snipers are shooting, you know, it's wrong. But yet the Negro is supposed to behave in a superior manner and supposed to see the difference. Hoses and dogs were turned on the people in Alabama. But yet we are supposed to live with this and have no feelings about it and at no time show any resentment.
All I gotta say is burn wife, burn the mother.
You can't even get a job around here, not a decent job. All right, they hired my mother as a cook. She cooked for a white woman almost 15 years, but yet and still, she's not good enough to come through the front door, go through the back door, and this and that. Well, she had to do it because she had us to take care of.
If they treat us right, we'll treat them right.
That's right. I'd be willing to live next door hand in hand with a white man.
If he treat my people.
That's right, if they treat us just like we're supposed to be treated, like we're human and not dogs.
There was a great deal of destruction of property, a great deal of rock throwing, a great deal of bottle throwing, a great deal of Molotov cocktail throwing. There was some very professional arson done out there that I saw firsthand. But there were relatively few people killed, and most of them, I think almost 10 to 1, that the people killed were colored. Now, these people are armed. Out there in the ghetto. They have certainly an adequate number of firearms. They have adequate ammunition. They looted scores of pawn shops in order to get these guns, sporting goods stores, war surplus stores. They have hunting rifles. They have their own pistol. Why was it that so few people got killed on the side of the police? This strikes me as being a violent protest, but not necessarily a murderous insurrection, because the casualties don't look right.
We wonder how the normal, deprived person reacts when you're hungry, you're overcrowded, you have no hope. Some people commit suicide. Others must learn how to handle it and must not show it in any way. They must be patient. They must wait. How much can you be deprived?
You start in Alhambra and drove through Los Angeles and drive straight down Mission. You'll run through a Mexican neighborhood for 10 miles. And when you leave that Mexican neighborhood, you'll run into a colored neighborhood and you'll stay in that colored neighborhood until you get out of the city of Los Angeles. You'll drive 20 miles. And that the white people have abdicated the central part of Los Angeles, the Negroes and Mexicans. There are 1.5 million of them. And there is no race riot, because if there were a race riot, they would burn down the city of Los Angeles.
How come they can't do us like they do the whites? Huh? How come they can't do us like they do the whites?
It's not only the police department, man. It's every other police department.
It's the police department.
When I said last year this was going to happen, everybody said I was an alarmist, but I said that if the police continued in their course of behavior, we were going to have exactly this event. The only problem was when.
The intersections littered with debris from glass, from accidents, cars that had been abandoned and gutted by fire lying in intersections. A scene of complete and utter pandemonium spreading faster and faster throughout the ghetto.
This program was documented from more than 5 days of reportage by KPFK and KPFA at the time of the Los Angeles riots. The on-the-scene coverage and original reports were broadcast under the direction of Ben Sweet and Leonard Brown, assisted by Mike Hodell and Jim Osborne, and augmented by dozens of volunteer reporters in the field and in the station. The Fire This Time was produced and edited by Trevor Thomas. Richard Guy was sound engineer. This program is presented through the cooperation of the Forces of Change program of the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions in Santa Barbara. This is a Pacifica Radio production.